Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I can't emphasize enough how serious this situation is. That hurricane is about 350 miles to my south and east, but I have to tell you, the National Weather Service is using words like loss of life, immense human suffering possible, and catastrophic damage.
Are you willing to take a chance to risk your life? Are you willing to take a gamble? That's what you're doing. If you need to evacuate and you haven't, evacuate. The storm will kill you. Time is running out. We don't have that much time left.
Governor Rick Scott of Florida, and television coverage as well, as it continues, before we get to the primary reason for the visit, and Mitch Hescox is here as well, but let me talk to my friend Paul Douglas here for a second. Hello, buddy.
Good to see you, my friend.
Nice to
it
see
really
you.
Really is.
Paul Douglas was with Channel 2 here for the better part of a couple of years. By the way, Grzanich loves you. Steve Grzanich on the seventh floor.
Oh,
so I have to come
fan,
down
Paul,
and say
big
hi.
Fan.
Well, thank you.
But
I appreciate that.
You and Skilling, two of the great weather minds in America, what are we doing with this hurricane? How big a problem is it, and are we overstating it?
No, I don't think we're overstating it. It's been 4,000 days since a Category 3 or stronger hurricane hit the U.S. coast. You have to go back to 2005, Wilma. And there's a fear about apathy, hurricane amnesia. Hey, we haven't had a big one in 11 years.
And 27% of the new population of Florida who's never gone through one.
Yeah, the people on the barrier islands, they think, okay, I can wait till the last minute. I can watch the Weather Channel. I can listen to the radio. If it's really bad, then I'll get off the barrier island. Problem is, if a few million people get the same idea at the same time, you've got gridlock and people dying. And so I don't think this is being overhyped. It's going to be a Category 4. It's going to produce a storm surge up to 10 feet. I think most of NASA's Kennedy Space Center is going to be underwater by tomorrow morning.
Well, this is what kills people, right? It's the water.
It's not the surge.
Wind.
Yeah, it's not the wind. We get fixated on the winds,
yeah.
But it's the storm surge, which, you know, once that comes ashore, and it happens in the map, and literally in the blink of an eye, you know, a couple of minutes, you can go from a 2-foot rise to a 10-foot rise, and that cuts off escape routes.
The escape routes that the people in Charleston have used, they've done it well. They evacuated early. The people in Florida seem to be taking their time. And what I heard, which I was not aware of, and you can speak to this, that much like the scale that we grade earthquakes on, the exponential difference between a Category 2 and a 3 and a 3 and a 4 is a big deal, right? It's not 10 or 15 miles an hour wind. It's a big deal.
It's a logarithmic increase. So you're absolutely right. And this thing is going to be a 4. There's actually a 1 in 3 chance it could strengthen to a Category 5 before it comes ashore.
Have we had a 5?
The last 5. This thing was a 5 before it hit Haiti.
Right.
In fact, it strengthened in 36 hours. It went from a tropical storm to a Category 5.
And that's because the waters are warm, which
the
lead to our
warm.
Secondary discussion here, our primary reason for this. But the other thing, which I had not seen, and I know it's happened before, is this hook shot, where there's a potential
loop.
Computer models kick it out off the coast of where Raleigh, maybe, or not Raleigh, but the North Carolina coast, and sends it back to Florida for a second hit.
I just looked at the latest European model and the U.S. models, and it indicates a big loop, and that this thing will be back over the Bahamas by Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. Whether it takes another swipe at the U.S., unclear. But this is another thing we're seeing. Weather systems increasingly are stalling, and we have these holding patterns. And when the weather stalls, bad things happen. More severe floods, more intense droughts.
Which leads us to this. My friend Paul Douglas, who I've known for 25 years, I remember many of the conversations you and I have had through the years. And back in the day, you were a non-believer, might be a little strong, but to cut to the chase, climate change was not something you went, oh, yeah, I'm signed up. Absolutely. And as a scientist, I listen to you because you've always been smarter than me.
Hardly.
You have had a change in heart over the past few years that is fact-based and spiritually based. The book's called Caring for Creation, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. As we said on the show, I made a promise that, well, Hillary and Trump yell at each other. We'll try to actually discuss some issues here. This is a big deal. Are we going to spend money on this? Are we going to do something substantial about this? And that's why Mitch, why am I having so much trouble saying Hescox? Mitch Hescox is here. My pal Mitch is here.
Good enough.
Mitch, the Environmental Evangelical Network?
Evangelical Environmental Network, correct.
Thanks. And what's your website for that?
Creationcare.org.
All right. But this book details, in the great style of Paul Douglas's writing, how the Earth has a fever, how we're messing with the thermostat of the planet, and how we can answer, probably in a combination of scientific and spiritual terms, of what we know and what you believe in your heart and your head. Does God cause earthquakes? Does God cause Matthew? Can it be stopped? Are we making a mountain out of a molehill? What do we need to do? We're going to answer all these questions and fix this problem by 10 o'clock. Stand by. Andre will join me in this in just a second as well. But first, it's 921. This is 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Make no mistake, this agreement will help delay or avoid some of the worst consequences of climate change. It will help other nations ratchet down their dangerous carbon emissions over time and set bolder targets as technology advances, all under a strong system of transparency that allows each nation to evaluate the progress of all other nations. And today, the world has officially crossed the threshold for the Paris Agreement to take effect. Today, the world meets the moment. History may well judge it as a turning point for our planet.
President Obama yesterday talking about the new Paris Accords. A lot of you have heard about the Kyoto Accords and do people sign on? Do they not sign on? And how big a role does China have to play in all of this? Can it be done without China? We'll get to all of that. But Mitch, tell me how you get the book Caring for Creation, because my rule is you get two copies, you're careless, you lose the first one.
You can get it at any major bookseller, whether it's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, most Christian booksellers. It's available all around the country at any place.
And at EEN, what is your daily duty?
I'm the president and CEO, so I get the pleasure of running the place and spending a lot of time talking in churches and going to Capitol Hill. And on about six times, I've actually met with President Obama.
Let's start at the end here. The number one thing you hear from people is, okay, listen, I get it. The ice is melting. The polar bears have nowhere to go. But why would I give governments who have pissed away all of my money already more money to do it incorrectly? You guys see it differently, though, because you see a different way to spend the money, right?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing is we have to create and do a clean energy economy. And that means we do have to have market-based solutions to climate change. Already, Bloomberg Clean Energy, Bloomberg Energy says that the renewable energy is unstoppable. The change is not going to stop. So what we need to do is have some policies that are government-based that will put a price on carbon to take out the extra costs that we pay in the bodies and the hearts and minds of our children, and we don't pay on our gas meter, but I think, or our electric meter. But I think one of the things we have to do is just completely to change this economy. We are in this clean energy revolution, and our job is we want to jumpstart it. I mean, we've often talked about in sports, as we were joking about, sports have been on steroids in some cases for a lot. We want to jump the economy on steroids, a clean energy economy. It's already happening. There are 12 times as many jobs growing in the clean energy economy than the rest of the United States on average.
But here's the thing that I run into all the time. We run into it, Paul Douglas, with the price of gasoline. People go, I can't believe that gasoline jumped 50 cents last week, you know, because maybe the refinery in Whiting had an issue. I can't believe that you want to put a nuclear energy generation project somewhere near me. In other words, fix all my problems, but I don't want to be inconvenienced. For everybody driving by in a car that doesn't own a Tesla and doesn't plan on getting one anytime soon, that gas has to come from somewhere. So can we do it generationally within change? Because every problem, right, every problem has an immediate solution, a midterm solution, a long-term solution. The long-term solution is not having gasoline-powered cars, because you've got to change habits that have been put in place 100 years.
Right, yeah. And we were all riding horses 120 years ago.
Right.
That habit changed.
Yeah. Hey, don't yell at me.
We didn't come out of the Stone Age because we ran out of stones. We came out of the Stone Age because we found a better way. We used to have a word for that. We would call it progress.
Right.
Now
right,
people right. kind of curl up in the fetal position and say, I agree with you. But once people realize that there's an economic benefit, that they will save money on their energy, and there will be more good-paying jobs in the clean energy sector
right.
than in the dinosaur juice dirty fuel sector. It's already happening. And this is, I agree with Mitch, this is about empowering the markets. It's not going to be solved by some bureaucrat, you know, sitting in Washington, D.C. It's going to be solved by thousands of new businesses that solve the energy challenge. We need more energy. We want to pay less for it. We want fewer unpleasant side effects.
But you're an innovator. You've always been an innovator. You have multiple companies that you've invested your own money and sweat in. So would this, in the model that you guys have discussed, would this look like Paul Douglas has a company that has been developed specifically to take care of my small piece, my Paul Douglas-sized piece of climate change, and therefore you would be part of the privatized interest of fixing the problem? Is that what we're talking about?
I believe that's the case. Sir Richard Branson said this is the greatest wealth creation opportunity the world has ever seen. There's nothing wrong with that, America. And if you really believe in true American exceptionalism, you know, we have a habit of engineering around seemingly, you know, intractable problems, impossible problems, sending men to the moon, fighting two fascist regimes simultaneously in World War II with the greatest generation. We can figure this out, but it's going to come from the markets. So we have to dial down fossil fuel use at the same time we dial up gradually, methodically, clean energy. And it's happening, but we need to move faster. And the result is going to be not only a potential solution for climate change long term, but short term health benefits. Mitch points out a statistic that still makes the hairs, what few hairs are left, stand up on the back of my neck.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason that we have to do it quickly. One in three children in the United States today already have asthma, autism, ADHD, or severe allergies, all related to how we use petrochemicals and fossil fuels. You know, half of America lives where air is unsafe to breathe.
Right, so if you don't care about polar bears, maybe you care about your kids and your grandkids.
Absolutely. That's the whole message of our book. It's not about polar bears. It's about kids.
It's about our kids. And what responsibility do we have to our kids and their kids?
And their kids and their kids and their kids, because it goes on. Andrea?
Hurricane Sandy. I love your book, by the way. It's a great read. Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, it was so massive is a good case in point of why you cite that fear doesn't drive people to accept the reality of climate change. Why didn't Sandy move the national needle for addressing climate change?
Well, especially since it affected the Northeast where everything happens.
Right. That's part of it, the fact that it hit Louisiana and not New York City.
Sandy.
I'm thinking Katrina.
Yeah.
Again, it's connecting the dots. I mean, we're wired to react to weather. We don't always make the connection with climate. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, some of it manufactured misinformation. It really goes back to the smoking debate. I smoked back in the 70s, and I wanted to believe Philip Morris's attorneys and scientists, paid-for scientists, who said, you know what, you can't prove that smoking three packs a day caused poor Aunt Betty to pass away.
Right.
And at the time,
she just had a cough.
Yeah, she just had a bad cough.
Right.
And I think one of the things that we've talked about Sandy, too, and sorry for interrupting, is that, you know, Governor Christie, who's been pretty much a climate denier, and their team came up with one of the greatest marketing strategies a year after. You know, we're stronger than the storm. Basically putting that the humanity is greater than the storm. And that created a complete different ethos about the storm that really drove it to ground. Forget about all the millions of houses that were still left to be repaired, the dollars, and the 50,000 people in New York City alone that were impacted just because of the 9 inches of sea level rise. And I think it really helped take the focus on what allowed Sandy to be such an extreme storm into how do we repair it. But we have to move beyond the good news stories, in a sense, to say, let's be realistic. We have problems. We have to defend our kids. And, you know, let's quit burying our heads in the sand and move forward.
Well, that's why when we come back from the news here, I want to just run through some of the common things you're going to hear, whether it's talk radio or the stuff you guys hear every day, and take the politics out of it as well. Because this ain't a liberal thing. This ain't a conservative thing. No. This ain't a right thing. This ain't a left thing. This is an everybody thing. Right?
Yep. Absolutely.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Caring for Creation, that's the book, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. And again, get it wherever books are sold. Get two copies. Well, get three. You know, it's rainy. One might get damaged in the rain, then you'll have the two, the backup. Get four, give one to a friend. It's an easy read, and it's very well written. You're not going to get bogged down in tons of science. Let me introduce the guests again. Mitch Hescox is here, former Methodist minister, worked in the coal industry, so he knows about fossil fuels, and heads up the Evangelical Environmental Network and speaks to people all day, every day about this problem. Paul Douglas, former Channel 2 meteorologist and been in Minneapolis on and off for years. Every once in a while, the authorities catch on to where he is, and he has to move again in the middle of the night. And swimsuit model.
Yes.
As well. That's
yeah,
going well.
Thank you for pointing that out.
All right, let's do science here, and let's do it quickly. I'm going to throw you a few things.
Okay.
These are the common arguments you guys hear every day.
Okay.
And you just give me your quick responses to each one of these. Climate change, it's nonsense. Gone along for thousands of years. It's just another cycle.
Yeah, the climate has changed in response to changes in solar radiation, volcanoes, wobbles in the earth, spin. But this time, we are the ones producing the forcing. We've increased CO2 from 280 to 400 parts per million. So we haven't seen levels this high in at least 800,000 years. And that's not based on climate models, Steve. That's based on ice core samples. So we're changing the chemical composition.
And they don't fake it, do they? The ice core samples?
No, no. This whole, you know, you can believe in conspiracy theories all you want. But if you really take time to look at the data, the evidence, it's pretty clear that it's warming.
Another argument. What's a degree or two among friends?
When's the last time you were 2 degrees warmer?
This is what I love. This is one of the great analogies in the book where you talk about the Earth's running a fever and how crappy you feel when you're running a fever.
And there are symptoms, right? Runny nose, you know, hot flashes, nausea. We're seeing those symptoms.
A lot of people
up.
Get that while listening to the show.
Well, nausea.
No, the hot flashes. How about this? Science disagrees. There's no unified theory on this.
No. Absolutely.
It's just nonsense.
It's bunk. It's pure bunk. There's a narrative out there because some of the richest corporations on the planet don't want to be disrupted, right?
Oh, of course not. How about this? Liberals want our money and they want more regulation. So you liberal types, by the way, this is funny saying this to Paul. You liberal types, you're just trying to create this because somebody's getting paid and his name's Al Gore.
I'm a Reagan Republican. I'm a Teddy Roosevelt Republican. And no, again, I understand the knee-jerk reaction because a lot of conservatives say, if you're right, Paul, the only solution could be more government and more regulation. And that's obviously a very bad thing for conservatives. But that's not what's going to solve this
problem. No, and that's not what you guys are saying.
It's
going
to be
market-based. We can't afford the fix. We can't afford the fix to do it. And what about China? Where's China in the middle of all of this?
We can't afford not to fix it, first off.
Right.
I mean, the object is that quoting the last thing is that I was quoted in the New York Times saying, you know, for me as a Christian, it's about following Jesus and being his disciple, not about Al Gore. And it's about defending our children's health and not about polar bears. I mean, we're all concerned about all grutz critters, but as we mentioned earlier, our kids are suffering right now. And this is the greatest moral challenge of our time, but yet also the greatest opportunity for hope. And to answer your question about China, you know, 3,000 people are dying a week in China because of air pollution. 75% of the people that have, in this new economy of China, made millions, are leaving because of the pollution. China also has the greatest production of clean energy in the world. China does not like instability. One of the reasons they're getting rid of their coal plants is to take care of the instability in the country. Plus, they're making tremendous amounts of money from it.
So they're literally the before and after picture.
Absolutely.
They know they have a problem, and they're moving faster than we are, which is ironic. They don't have a democratic process, of course. They can just decide this is the way we're going, and that's the way we're going.
Can solar power help energy efficient? I mean, what can we do on a much smaller scale?
Andrea, God buried the dinosaur juice and put a free, clean fusion reactor directly above our heads. In 6 hours, every 6 hours, more solar energy reaches the Earth than we use planet-wide. So we have the capacity, and the prices of solar and wind are dropping even faster than natural gas. So again, in the end, decarbonization, a cleaner energy mix, it's going to be driven not by politics, Steve. It's going to be driven by energy security and it's going to be driven by economics. Lower prices, more energy, fewer side effects. I have a son in the Navy who flies helicopters, graduated from the Naval Academy, and he was just over in the South China Sea, I mean, patrolling, trying to keep the oil supply chains open. We are the police cops for the entire planet, making sure that oil gets to where it needs to get to. Really? Can't we find a better way to keep the economy powered up, the lights on, and people employed? What worked in the 1920s is not going to work in the 2020s.
Evangelism is a Christian thing. We got a lot of Christians in the room. What about the Jews? What about the Muslims? What about the rest of the planet?
Well, I think the whole faith community, by and large, is together on solving climate change. You saw it in Pope Francis's encyclical last year. 6 years ago, the World Luzon Movement, which was founded by Billy Graham and John Stott, came up with a Cape Town commitment, which addressed climate change as the greatest threat to the poor around the world. Last October, the National Association of Evangelicals, which I'm on the board of directors of, basically copied the Luzon Movement station on climate change. So there's unanimous agreement, if I can say it right, among 99% of the faith community that we have to act on climate change. And it's true. It's the real thing that we have to do. And now back to the do is the greatest cause people can have today in the United States is something we call energy freedom. You can have your choice now of how you're getting your electricity, whether you buy it through a co-op or buy it through, I do it in Pennsylvania, we have a switch program, or do it. And we're fighting all around the country to keep utilities to break up their monopolies. And quite honestly, there you got a lot of utilities that want to keep their monopolies because that's their business model. But distributed electricity is the wave of the future. That's what's going to happen. One of the things we're going to see. But you're absolutely right. It starts with us. Each of us can become energy efficient. We can take how we grow our gardens. We promote businesses. And we are going to need some policies. But the fundamental message of our book is I grew up with a Protestant work ethic. We can be a large part of the solution. And it begins with us.
I would also make the analogy, because I was a doubter for a long time and a we can't spend money we don't have guy. And maybe this little grandbaby has changed it for me a little bit, too. But having said all that, everybody goes, we can't do it all. The pile's too big. There's just too much to do. We can't do it all. We can't break the lobbies. We can't do this. We can't do that. We all grew up in an era where we saw people throwing garbage out of their car windows, where the idea that you would actually recycle anything is ridiculous.
Rivers caught on fire.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's absolutely true. Now it's absolutely second nature. I mean, everywhere you go, if you don't recycle a can, don't you feel a little dirty? Don't you feel a little bit, you know? So that's less than a generation that it took for that to change. Right. Our kids were the first wave of that. So that's just a small microcosm of how everybody can do their part. It's my hula hoop theory of life. Stand in a hula hoop, look around, fix everything you can see from that hula hoop, and the world gets better. So start with your environment there. A couple more minutes of these guys when we come back on 720 WGN. All right, we're going to run out of time here in just a second, so I want to give you both an opportunity to tell me the following. I don't like having discussions like this without having some marching orders. What do each of you recommend for listeners who are fired up by the conversation? They're going to get your book, Caring for Creation, The Evangelicals. I'm all choked up. The Evangelicals' Guide to Climate Change in a Healthy Environment. But what do you want people to go out and do today?
Keep an open mind, first of all. Yeah, buy the book. If you have a parent, a sibling who's still a climate change denier, we're trying to reframe it in ways that are more relevant to conservatives and evangelicals. And you know what, Steve? If you don't believe the scientists and you don't believe the ministers or the meteorologists, Tom Skilling, by the way, has a blurb in the book. Believe your own eyes. You're going to see the symptoms. Matthew is stronger because of climate change. We've had 5,000-year floods in the last year. Keep an open mind. You're going to see more symptoms. They're going to be harder to dismiss and deny as time goes on.
Mitch?
Start to act. Do something for yourself. Do something for God's planet. Do something for your kids. Become energy efficient. Do a better job of recycling. Compost. Do your own community gardens to get healthy food.
Hula hoop. Do stuff to your house, your neighborhood.
Absolutely. That's where it begins at. That's where it starts. And then as you do those things, then we'll get engaged in helping make some sound policies, some great judgment that we can go forward together to make this a nonpartisan, bipartisan, all-planet activity so we can save our kids.
Caring for Creation. Get the book. Great to see you guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll take a break. Come back. Bill and Wendy are next.